And good afternoon. It's a Juno afternoon this Monday, the 27th of July. I'm Ben Brown. I'll be your host today. We have some great guests for us. We have good afternoon. This is Ben Brown, and it is Monday, the 27th of July, a Juno afternoon here on KRNN or on KTOO, depending on when you're listening. This afternoon, we have some great hosts. Nathan Young will be here to highlight activities at the Juno Karate Academy. Francis Leach will be here from Juno Lyric Opera about Juno Lyric Opera's receiving the Mayor's Award for Arts as the outstanding local arts organization. Lindsay Caron will be here to talk about painting Eagle Beach, and we'll learn about some screenings of a new film at the Goldtown. So stay tuned for the rest of this afternoon here on a Juno afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. New research paints an unsettling picture of the future of shellfish in coastal Alaska. The effects of ocean acidification are worsening. Researchers say that could mean the end of hatcheries in the next 25 years if costly mitigation efforts are not put in place. KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver has more in the first of a five-part series.
2040. That's the date put forward by researchers in the ongoing study by the NOAA Pacific Marine Environment Lab in Seattle and the University of Alaska Fairbanks Ocean Acidification Research Center.
It was very, very alarming, not knowing much about ocean chemistry. I know a lot more now than when we started, that's for sure.
Jeff Hetrick owns the Aleutic Pride Shellfish Hatchery located in Seward on Alaska's Kenai Peninsula, where the study took place. It's run by the Chugach Regional Resources Commission, who say they strive to develop tribal natural resource management programs for conservation and stewardship of traditional use areas. It's currently the only full-time commercial shellfish hatchery in the state, and it produces millions of shellfish spawn each year, from different types of clams to scallops, sea cucumbers to king crab. Right now, the hatchery only has an annual 5-month window where ocean conditions are ripe for production, and that could close completely in 25 years. Jeremy Mathis is a NOAA oceanographer who worked on the project.
Unfortunately, Alaska is the canary in the coal mine for ocean acidification.
Ocean acidification is the name for certain changes in the ocean's chemistry due to higher levels of carbon dioxide that make it hard for organisms like clams and mussels to develop hard shells. And without shells, they aren't protected and can't survive.
We're seeing changes in water chemistry faster in Alaska than really any other place around the world. So it's our job now in the next few years to figure out what the magnitude and impact of those changes are going to be.
And he says, find a way to protect Alaska's fisheries before it's too late. In Homer, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
Tomorrow, we'll look at what one hatchery in the Pacific Northwest is doing to cope with changing ocean conditions. A new documentary about a Native American-owned South Dakota business made its world premiere recently as part of a series of short films celebrating small business. Jim Kent spoke with the co-founder of Native American Natural Foods about the film.
Buffalo Returns is a documentary film produced by Tribeca Digital Studios and American Express that tells the story of the Tonka Bar. Manufactured by Native American Natural Foods in Kyle, South Dakota, the all-natural buffalo and cranberry snack bar is sold at over 6,000 locations in all 50 states. CEO and co-founder Carlene Hunter says a nationally successful company like Native American Natural Foods isn't something people expect to see coming out of one of the poorest areas in the country.
You know, when they hear about Native American Natural Foods and our brand coming from the third poorest county in the United States, and our triple bottom line of our company, where we're trying to not only address the economic situation of the Lakota people of our reservation, but also the health and environment, it catches people's attention.
And though American Express and Tribeca Digital Studios were looking for stories about successful businesses at the forefront of the entrepreneurial renaissance, Carlene Hunter says the primary goal for creating Native American Natural Foods was the Lakota people. Buffalo Returns has premiered in over 40 million homes on cable platforms such as Comcast, Time Warner Cable, and the American Express YouTube channel. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. For 45 years, NARC has stood firm for justice in Indian country on critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And it's about 6 minutes after the hour. Ben Brown here on a Juno afternoon. Thank you for listening. Our first guest today is Nathan Young, and he's here from the Juno Karate Academy. Welcome to a Juno afternoon, Nathan. Well, we are very glad to have you here. And so why don't you go ahead and tell us about Juno Karate Academy, its history, and what it is you do to teach people about the wonderful art of karate.
Well, I have a great privilege in life in teaching karate. My wife and I own and operate the Juno Karate Academy, the two of us and our four other staff members. We teach traditional karate do to youths and families and adults here in Juno.
And so how long have you been doing it here in Juno?
We've been here. My wife and I moved here 6 years ago, and we opened this Karate Academy in partnership at first with Pavitt's Health and Fitness about 5 years ago. And prior to that, we lived in Sitka and ran a karate school, which is still in operation by one of my past students. Both my wife and I were born and raised in Alaska and just really enjoy living here in Juneau.
Well, that was one of my concerns when you said you'd move from Sitka, is if you left everyone there with no karate instruction. But that's you deputized someone and left them behind teaching karate there.
Yeah, we have a partner school over there, and we teach back and forth.
Well, now, how is it that you and your wife came to be so involved in karate yourselves? Is it something you learned as young people, or did you go outside and come back with that? Or
Yes and no. I was raised on Baranoff Island in Port Alexander, a little fishing community at the time, about 150 people. And they brought a karate instructor into the school for a couple days, kind of as an enrichment program, when I was about 9 or 10, and I really enjoyed it. Myself and a couple of their families just started practicing at the local community center, and so in high school I started teaching karate. Didn't really know what I was doing, but I did my best and worked hard.
And so that's a great way to be exposed to something if you're attending school in a small rural community. Clearly evidence of the value of outreach and kind of, you know, parachuting experts in, whether it's the arts or karate.
Absolutely.
Or anything. Have you been formally trained a great deal since then?
Yeah, I continued understudying through the Sitka instructor, Mike Taylor, who's actually raised here in Juneau. He's a JDHS graduate and is teaching up in Wasilla. We actually just had him down earlier this month for a series of seminars. And so I continued my studies through high school. And went to a university in Fairbanks, and there I met my wife, and accepted a job in Sitka after graduation. We moved there, and she started practicing karate, and the rest, I guess, is history. My instructor, Sensei Tanaka, lives up in Anchorage. He's actually the highest-ranked black belt in the world for Shotoryu karate.
And he lives in Anchorage.
He lives in Anchorage. He travels all over the world. He directs world-level tournaments. And has karate schools all over the world. So I was privileged to have a somewhat a local resource, but received a very rigorous karate education.
Outstanding, and I have no doubt that you passed it on to your current students. So let's speak about the Juno Karate Academy, how it's currently organized, where it is, and how the classes are structured if people are interested in taking this up.
Sure. Well, we teach traditional Japanese karate, and there's four different prominent styles in the world. We practice one called Shotoryu. And martial arts as a whole, there's many different options here in Juneau. There are all different options, none of them better than others. So it's kind of you have an opportunity to visit different schools and just see what's going to be a personal fit. The purpose of karate is to become a better person. It's to improve yourself physically and mentally, get healthier, think differently. And so this benefits kids at home and at school. Adults, it really benefits their work environment and just working to become a better person. And that's probably one of the biggest misconceptions that I run across is people have this idea that karate is going to promote violence or their kid's going to get start hitting people, and it's actually the opposite. We get a lot of parents that come in, they're concerned that their kids are aggressive or disrespectful or not being able to focus, and we're actually able to help them quite a bit with that, bringing calmness of your mind and awareness of others, teaching respect, how to do schoolwork, how to follow through, have good self-discipline, be polite to adults, respectful to adults, do their chores, just become a well-rounded human being and a good citizen.
And how many students do you currently have?
We're right around 100. We're kind of a small dojo. We're located in the Jordan Creek Center. We moved there about a year ago. We used to do it in partnership with Pavitt's Health and Fitness, and we had a great relationship with them. It was a great facility. We just outgrew it. So we about a year ago, we opened up there in the Jordan Creek Center. We had got a nice little spot. And we have classes for all ages. We have a kinder karate program that's specific to 4 and 5 year olds. We do lots of motor development and brain development type of things. But we're our focus is a family dojo. We do have some adults. We're about 75% comprised of youth. Our beginning classes all the way through our advanced classes are all mixed, meaning we have children of all ages, teenagers, adults, ladies, men. And we actually just started a ladies-only program on Thursday evenings. Ladies and teenage girls get to come and learn karate from our female instructors, and that's been a really rewarding class for our new students.
That's kind of interesting, because Pavitt's actually used to be located out in the Jordan Creek Center before they built their standalone facility there.
Yeah, you know, and we had an interesting connection. When I was looking for a spot to start a dojo, I originally approached Corey Pavitt and told him who I was, and he goes, "Oh, yeah, I know all about you." Mike Taylor, the instructor that I'd learned from Sitka, him and Corey were high school friends. Actually practiced karate there in the 70s. There was a Shoryu dojo just downtown in the church basement across from the Federal Building. And so they knew each other. They were long-lost friends. They actually reunited at our dojo last year at a grand opening. They hadn't seen each other in 30 years.
Well, that's great. Alaska is a wonderful small world in that
way.
The whole world is a small, wonderful world in that way. So it sounds like you've got a wide variety of offerings. You cater to people from all ages, both genders. Do people just have to go and sign up and, you know, start taking the classes if they want to get interested? Or do you have open houses from time to time? Or could you do a little introduction to it if someone was interested but didn't want to commit to signing up for class?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, my the thing that I advocate to folks who are interested is learning martial arts is a very personal journey. It's something that you have to make sure that you're getting get the right fit for. And so I encourage people to visit as many different martial arts schools and towns as they possibly can. If they visit us and decide that it's not for them, they're going to go somewhere else, so that's perfectly fine, because they need to find their home, so to speak. So we highly encourage people to visit dojos. Come and visit us. You can come and try classes out for free. You can watch our classes. We have a nice observation area. We just want to make sure that we're going to be a good fit for you, so it's a good relationship. Yeah, you can come and try out a class anytime. We sign up people anytime. We go continuous throughout the summer, throughout the school year, we welcome visitors.
And if people do get good enough to want to actually be competitive, what's the time frame for those competitions? Are those organized around the academic year, or are they just year-round as well?
Yeah, it just kind of depends on the different venues that you want to compete. Last year, we started running just a little in-house tournament at one of the local schools in February, and that's actually something that we're working to expand to be able to grow and open that up to other karate schools. There's a state-level championship in Anchorage that happens in May, and that's a qualifier for the national karate championships that happen middle of July. And I've had many of our students compete at the state and the national levels, and some of our students have become gold medal winners at the national competitions.
And do those move around? They're here, and it's held in a various place around the country?
Yeah, they do. Every year they're in a different city.
So in July, hopefully not in Pensacola or Houston in July, but I'm sure it's all inside.
I have been to Houston in July, national championships in 2007 at 110 degrees.
And you survived.
Just barely. I'm an Alaska guy.
That's right. Well, if it was just one more instance of using that self-control skill and the equanimity, it made you a better person, right?
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, how would people go about getting in touch with you, Nathan, if they want to learn more about the Juno Karate Academy?
Yeah, so we are on the web, junokarate.com. We'll get you to our website. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're active on those. They can always call us, 723-8316. That's our business line. Our email link is up on our webpage as well, so we welcome folks to contact us.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you very much, Nathan Young, for coming on a Juno Afternoon this Monday the 27th and sharing some information about Juno Karate. So if you're interested, go to junokarate.com and take it from there.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 27th of July, 2015. It was on this day, 1789, the Department of Foreign Affairs was created in Washington by President Washington, which a couple of months later was renamed the Department of State, and he appointed Thomas Jefferson as the first Secretary of State. Jefferson, who disliked the formality and the elaborate social codes of European courts where diplomacy was conducted. Jefferson, who wrote, "Commerce with all nations, alliance with none, should be our motto." It's the birthday of Joseph Mitchell, born Fairmont, North Carolina, 1908, a writer for the New Yorker magazine for many, many years, writing about people living on the fringe in New York City, gypsies, alcoholics, homeless, fishmongers, a band of Mohawk Indians who worked as riveters on skyscrapers because they had no fear of heights. Joseph Mitchell interviewed criminals, evangelists, politicians, celebrities. He said he was a good interviewer because he had lost the ability to detect insanity. It's the birthday of Hilaire Belloc, born in Paris, 1870, known in his own lifetime as a serious essayist, today best known for his books of humorous verse. Hilaire Belloc, who wrote, "When I am dead, I hope it may be said, his sins were scarlet, but his books were red." It's the birthday of Elizabeth Hardwick, Lexington, Kentucky, 1916, author of many books of fiction, who in the early 60s met with her friends over dinner to found a book reviewing journal called the New York Review of Books, which she said was dedicated to the unusual, the difficult, the lengthy, the intransigent, and above all, the interesting. It's the birthday of the novelist Bharati Mukherjee, born in Calcutta, 1940. She said, "As a bookish child in Calcutta, I used to thrill to the adventures of bad girls whose pursuit of happiness swept them outside the bounds of social decency." She went to college in Calcutta. After graduation, she asked her father if she could go abroad and study to be a writer, and then she would come back home for an arranged marriage with a nuclear physicist of her caste and class, and her father agreed to that. She went off to the University of Iowa, the Iowa Writers Workshop, started dating a man named Clark Blaze, and after just 2 weeks, they went downtown during their lunch break and got married in a lawyer's office above a coffee shop. She wrote, "The 5-minute ceremony suddenly changed me into a transient with conflicting loyalties to two very different cultures." Here's a poem for today by Carrie Fountain entitled "Late Summer." "Out for a walk tonight. The dog is throwing all her weight against the leash, lunging toward the fat tomcat, licking his black ankles with a delicious, solemn attention at the top of the neighbor's steps. Because this is what the dog was made to do, because for some lucky animals the space between the body and what it wants is all there is." "Late Summer" by Carrie Fountain, from her collection Burn Lake, published by Penguin, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering the weekly poetry podcast, Poetry Off the Shelf, featuring contemporary American poets, readings, reviews, and more. Subscriptions at poetryfoundation.org/ Poetry Podcast. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Selfies get a bad rap, but one digital artist is taking a more positive approach. Selfies as a form of expression.
When I'm scrolling on my Instagram and I see a photo of a girl and I know she's feeling really good that day, that makes me feel good and that makes me want to photograph myself, and I think it's a chain reaction.
The pros of a selfie from a selfie pro, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Tonight on 360 North at 8, Boards on the Water traces the exciting evolution of water skiing. At 9, Embrace of Aging, the female perspective of growing old, explores how having a purpose in life improves health. At 9:30, Life on the Line, Baby Blue, follows international medical teams working to save Egyptian children with congenital heart disease. Healthy Body, Healthy Mind is at 10, tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
All right, and it's about 21 minutes after the hour. You are listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm Ben Brown, and thank you for listening. And our next guest this afternoon, this Monday, the 27th of July, is Lindsay Caron, and she's here to talk about a very fun subject, I have no doubt, painting Eagle Beach. So good afternoon, Lindsay. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And I hope you're not going to be painting Eagle Beach this afternoon because your canvas is going to get a little bit wet. But when the weather improves slightly, when are you going to be painting Eagle Beach?
We're actually taking a tour out tomorrow.
Okay.
So it isn't weather conducive. We have big tents that we set up and make it very comfortable regardless of the rain.
And so what's involved in the whole painting Eagle Beach program? It sounds like it's a turnkey opportunity for someone who's interested in getting out there and painting something like that for the first time.
Sure. So I work for Adventure Flow. It's a startup company here in Juneau. And they brought me on as an art guide. And they thought it would be something very unique to offer visitors and residents alike. And so I take them out to Eagle Beach, and it's a whole new way of exploring the land and what it offers to people through a creative lens.
Absolutely. And so what's your history? Are you from around here? And were you really familiar with Eagle Beach before you became an instructor out there?
Sure. I grew up in Wisconsin, and I currently live in Los Angeles, California.
Okay.
And I came out here for the very first time this summer. So I have been really indulging in the hiking and learning all about Juneau and all of the land and spending a lot of time at Eagle Beach, so getting very familiar with it.
And that was your first time out at Eagle Beach when you first came to Juneau this summer?
Correct.
It's a pretty special place, isn't it?
Yes. Magical, and it changes every day.
Yes. And, of course, as some listeners may know, it's our only state park recreation area in Juneau.
Mm.
So if you buy one of those state park daily passes, you can actually use it there and not have to pay for parking.
Excellent.
But to use it anywhere else, you have to get on the ferry and take your car there. Just apropos of nothing. When in the summer did you start doing this? How many groups have you taken out there, and what balance of locals to visitors has it been?
So I came out here in May, and we started right away in June, and we've been taking out, I feel like it's been about 5 trips so far, and from 2 people to 10 people, and I really enjoy the small groups. They're intimate, and I get a lot of hands-on with the people, and anything
else? Mm-hmm. That sounds great. And so What have some of the visitors been like? Are they independent travelers, or are some of them off some of the cruise ships, or is it a combination of both?
Definitely a combination of both. I think that what we offer as Adventure Flow definitely is good for the independent travelers, the people who are a little bit more adventurous, who kind of want the off-the-beaten-path adventure. And we have also had cruise ship people come in on our tours, and I also love offering it to locals.
Absolutely. Well, this experiential art is a kind of an up-and-coming thing. A lot of artists are trying to find ways to share their work with untapped audiences, and not just to make it a performer and audience sort of a thing, or a painter and a viewer sort of a thing, but to kind of blur that line between the creation and the appreciation. And so I'm sure that's got to be a great part of what you're doing. Let me ask you some logistical questions. So you've got tents set up out there in case it's not a bright – and you've had some nice, bright, sunshiny days, I trust.
Actually, every tour that we've led so far out there at Eagle Beach has been sunny. But tomorrow, I believe, we're going to have to test something else out.
Well, I have to say, Lindsay, you wouldn't be getting the full Juneau experience if you didn't have a day like today or tomorrow. And I don't know that tomorrow is going to be like today, but hypothetically, if it is, that's part of the full Juneau experience. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be good for you. So if it's not raining, then you don't have to be under the tent. But what are the media that you're using? Is it more than one type of surface and paint, or is it pretty standard? And tell us a little bit more about that.
Sure. So we give everyone sketchbooks, and we start out with sketching exercises, get people warmed up and a little bit more flexible. And I actually do some meditation with everyone as well to kind of get people to drop into a space and let go of their inhibitions. And then we use acrylics on the canvases. So we provide everything, including the canvas, the paints, the paintbrushes, all of the supplies needed. And acrylic is water-based paint, so it's very easy cleanup.
Uh-huh. Excellent. And then when they are done, are they able to take their sketches and their paintings home with them, or do you hang on to them, or do you ship them home if they have transportation challenges?
So we will ship if necessary, but we like everyone just walking on home with their canvases in hand.
And they're not ginormous canvases, I take it.
They're very easy to pack in a suitcase and travel with.
Excellent. So when you're back in L.A., are you a full-time artist there?
I am, yes. I do it full-time, and I travel with my art, and I do murals in different places, and a lot of social activism as well with my artwork.
And that's, of course, another thing that a lot of artists are finding a way to – and that's, of course, been going on for millennia. But I find more recently a lot of artists are trying to find ways to put a specific social activist or world-changing element into the art that they create. So do you think you'll be coming back to Alaska in future? Or first of all, I should ask, maybe you're going to stay here and do this during the winter. It's very different out at Eagle Beach during the winter. Have you thought about that at all?
So I'll be here through October. I actually have a solo exhibition at the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council.
Excellent.
And I'm very excited about that, and that will be through the month of October. And I will probably depart beginning of November to head back to Los Angeles.
Well, that's a good time. Not a bad time to go. Some people are cynical about the rain and the wind and everything when we get to fall here. But, you know, we need the moisture, and yes, absolutely. So if people are interested in learning more about Adventure Flow generally, and maybe I should ask you quickly, what other programs? You said this is one thing that this new startup company is doing.
Sure.
Is there any other Adventure Flow activity you'd like to have listeners learn a little bit more about?
Yeah, so we offer hiking tours on West Glacier Trail, and so it's a great opportunity to get really intimate with Mendenhall Glacier. It offers spectacular views, and it's a little bit more of a challenging trail, so it also gets people a little bit out of their comfort zones. It's really excellent. And then we also offer walking tours downtown Juneau.
Excellent. So West Glacier Trail, downtown Juneau, or painting out at Eagle Beach, three of the offerings from Adventure Flow. And as you said, it's a new company here in Juneau. And if people are interested, locals, or if they've got people visiting, they maybe want to sign up for one of these activities, how would they go about doing that?
The best way to sign up is through our website, adventureflow.us.
All right. And they can actually register there on the website?
Everything there.
Perfect. Lindsay Caron, anything else you'd like to share with our listeners on a Juneau afternoon?
Well, I appreciate you having me, and I'm very excited to be here in Juneau. It's been so full of inspiration.
Excellent. Well, we love welcoming people to Juneau generally, artists specifically, because we're such an arts-rich town. And congratulations on having a solo show at the Jack. And that'll be opening first Friday in October if you're going to be here the whole month.
Yes.
So stay tuned for that. And who knows, we very well may have Lindsay back on to talk about that show, because we don't have time to do it right now. Thanks again, Lindsay Caron, for joining us on A Juneau Afternoon.
Thank you.
some females have stories on this subject, too, like Miss Tracy Goldsmith. Tracy grew up in the woods of Wisconsin and is a complete cheesehead despite a recent dairy sensitivity. She comes from two very large Wisconsin posses, the Goldsmiths and the Lufenbergs. And this story is dedicated to those people she is lucky enough to call family. Her story begins while she was working in Antarctica, and she likes to think of it as the time when really hit the fan in her life. Tracy Goldsmith.
Okay, so we're all familiar with that small social media website called Facebook, right? You know, the one where you can post status updates like it's beautiful and sunny in Juneau and make all those suckers who aren't here jealous. It's also a site where people can tag you in things like really unfortunate photos. And can we just agree that Throwback Thursday shouldn't include college photos? I think that's really unnecessary. Anyway, so when I was working in Antarctica, Facebook and email were kind of my links to the outside and kept me connected to my friends and family. So on a pretty regular basis, I would take my coffee and my muffin before work and sit down at a computer and check them both. So one day I am checking Facebook, and I see I have little red numbers up in the right-hand corner, and I'm excited because I'm being notified that somebody's tagged me in something. So I open it up and see that I've been tagged in a post that says, "Your family is in our thoughts and prayers." I'm like, don't panic, Goldsmith, check your email. And I switch over, and I find out that my dad has landed himself in the hospital with a massive stroke. So I get on the phone right away and call the hospital so I can get his status update from my mother. And while she's trying to fill me in on the situation, I keep hearing this really distracting noise in the background. It's really hard to follow what she's saying because there's the sound that kind of sounds like Chewbacca, and it's just like, rah, 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 and I'm like, Ma, what is that sound? What's going on there? And she's like, oh, that's just your dad, honey. And I was like, okay, I should probably come home, huh, Mom? And she goes, yeah, I think that's a good idea. So luckily, 3 hours later, there was a flight north out of McMurdo, and I got on it. And 36 hours later, I was next to my dad's hospital bed back in Wisconsin. And there was my dad, the strongest man in my life, in a hospital gown and looking super vulnerable. His arms that had once driven a Harley motorcycle thousands of miles across this country were covered in IVs. His voice that would say things like, I don't think that's necessary, or I'm finer than frog hair, was completely unintelligible. And the mouth that used to shovel in cheese curds and ice cream was now being fed via tube down the nose. So I'm home for a couple of days, and it became a concern to the doctors that since the stroke, my dad had not had a bowel movement. So they decide to give him a suppository, and I am the only one there that day. So they tell me, you know, when things start rolling, just call us in. We'll take care of it. Should take about 30 minutes. So I sit down next to my dad, and we work on a crossword puzzle together. 20 minutes go by, and he suddenly lunges over and grabs my arm in this death grip, and his face is all clenched, and it's turning red, and he's looking panicked, and he's trying to say, I'm going to poop, and I'm frantically and desperately pushing the nurse's button. Because I just can't imagine seeing my dad the bed. Luckily, the nurses came in within seconds, and thank God for nurses. I got the hell out of there and let the professionals take care of my dad. Meanwhile, I go to the family waiting room and have a little breakdown and decide I gotta go home. I'd come back the next day. So I show up the next day, and my dad is excitedly trying to tell me something. So I have to hold a letter board in front of him, which is his new communication tool. So with the letter board, he has to spell out what he's trying to say so we can understand him. And so he spells out, that was a hard P-O-O-P, poop. I was like, it sure was, Dad. Physically for him, emotionally for me, and we both busted up laughing. So my family came up with a plan to deal with this situation, and so we decided that I would go back to Antarctica and finish my contract out while my mom took family medical leave. And when her medical leave would be finished, it's about the same time that my job in Antarctica was done, so I'd come home and replace her as caretaker for a little while. You know, I have about 8 weeks to think about this new role and, you know, our new family situation. And I have a lot of things weighing heavily on my mind, mainly like the progress that my dad's making. Like, I'm really hoping he's getting stronger and more mobile. But 8 weeks later, when I return to Wisconsin, I find him still wheelchair bound. He now wears a skate belt around his waist so we can help him stand up and keep him steady while he shuffles around. And he's still pretty nonverbal, so the letter board is pretty important. And now he has a peg tube in his stomach to keep sufficient amount of calories flowing in, which of course means those calories will be coming out. After I'm home for a few days, my mom has to return back to work, and so I'm left home alone with my dad for the first time. So my job is to get him up in the morning, which is, he's become worse than a teenager. He's kind of like, I'm old and I had a stroke, I don't have to get out of bed anymore. So I get him out of bed, and I help him get dressed, and I take him into the bathroom, and I help him brush his hair, brush his teeth, and I help him shave. And then I take him out to his recliner in the living room and set up his lunch, which is basically pouring his new liquid diet into a gravity bag. And then I plug that into his peg tube. About an hour and a half goes by, and then I hear those words I'm dreading to hear, which are, I gotta poop. I'm like, okay, I'm going to be cheerful. We're going to get through this. I help him up, take him into the bathroom. His job has become to grab this new handlebar that they've installed in their bathroom, and he can pull himself up. My job is to hold on to his gait belt while he sort of shuffles his butt around and lines it up with the toilet. I pull down his pants. Together, we both gently ease him down on the toilet, and then I leave so he can do his business. And while he's doing that, I am pacing nervously in the kitchen, trying to psych myself up for this next new job. And then I hear him call for me, at which point I return to the bathroom. He grabs the handlebar. I grab his gait belt. Together we stand him up. I hesitate while I'm standing there looking into his big, sparkly blue eyes. And I just need reassurance again that what I'm about to do is okay. And so I say, Dad, are you sure you're okay with me wiping your butt? And he gives me a look that can only be translated like this. Are you a blooming idiot? I'm standing here with my pants down. I just took a dump. There's nobody else home. If I could do it myself, I would. And then his face softens, and he gives this shrug and this head nod that he does now, and he's kind of like, yes, it's okay. So I do it. I clean him up just like he used to do for me many moons ago, and he's still the strongest man in my life. We just have a new normal now. Thanks.
And it's about 38 minutes after the hour here on a Juno afternoon. Ben Brown here. And our next guest is Frances Leach. Frances, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing well. How are you, Ben?
Very good. I can't complain. So we've got some exciting news, Frances, and I think the cat's out of the bag because last week a press release was issued by the Juno Arts and Humanities Council on behalf of the mayor, and it has to do with the Mayor's Awards for the Arts. And if I'm not mistaken, Juno Lyric Opera, an organization with which you are closely affiliated, is going to be receiving one of those awards. Isn't that correct?
That is correct, and we're very excited about it.
And that's the Mayor's Award for the Arts as the Outstanding Local Arts Organizations. Applause, applause, applause. That's awesome.
Yeah, we're really excited and honored.
Well, of course, because this is a special year for Juno Lyric Opera, so tell us a little bit about that.
It is indeed. This, believe it or not, Juno Lyric Opera has been around for 40 years.
Oh, my.
We were started in 1975, and we've been going strong ever since, and I think we're only getting stronger, so that's great news. And so it was a great thing to hear as we're getting ready to, you know, celebrate this 40 years of being here in Juno and get this great award.
Well, absolutely. So what, and of course I have to say, Juno Lyric Opera doesn't look a day over 29.
Oh, fantastic.
But what are some of the favorite things? How long have you been working with Juno Lyric Opera?
Well, I've been with Juno Lyric Opera since 2008. I took some time off to do some other things, but I came back a year ago and continue on staying for a while. So I've been there for a few years.
Yep, going on a decade. And what are some of the favorite projects you've been able to work on in your time with Juno Lyric Opera?
You know, I would have to be kind of selfish and say the favorite one that I worked on was Hairspray, and that was also because I got to be in it. I really do love performing on stage. So anytime I can do that and still be the executive director, it's really fun. But I would say the most exciting project that I've got to work on a lot with is the Who's Your Diva competition, which I know you're familiar with.
Yes, I got to be MC for Who's Your Diva 1 year a few years ago.
You sure did.
And that was a very fun evening. I do recall I was beaten within an inch of my life, but, you know, for the arts, it's all worth it.
Exactly, exactly. And you just don't know what's going to happen when you get 10 divas in a room vying for one crown.
Absolutely. Getting beaten to a pulp is likelier than not, I can say, now with the wisdom of hindsight on my side. So before we talk about the actual awards, let's let listeners know what Juno Lyric Opera has coming up this current season.
Well, we decided to go big or go home, and we are doing something crazy, and we're doing a production a month. And
hold on, say that again. A production every month?
A production every single month.
Oh my.
For this 40th anniversary. And it started, we did our kickoff with our spring gala in April and moved right on to Don Giovanni, which was a big hit. And now we're in the midst of producing our midsummer vocal workshop, which is this year, Carmina Burana. Which was a very popular production when we've done it in the past, and it was the most requested piece to do again. So that is underway. The concert for that will be on August 8th at 7:30 p.m. at Thunder Mountain High School. And then, drum roll, the next event will be in September, and that is Who's Your Diva, September 19th. And ticket sales go up for that on August 1st, and buy your tickets early because it usually sells out about a month in advance. In October, we are having a giant Halloween ball, which we're really excited about. And there's going to be live bands and costumes and prizes for your costumes. So that's going to be a big event not to miss. November, we are teaming up with the Nickelodeon Theater, and we're doing an opera musical film festival. Twice a week, we are going to be showing, we're going to be showing two Broadway musicals and two operas. So that's going to be a great opportunity. And one of them is going to be a sing-along, which we're pretty excited about. December is Amal and the Night Visitors. And that's going to run for 2 weekends, starting December 11th, finishing up December 20th. We have auditions for Amal and the Night Visitors on August 22nd from 10 to 3, and you can find information about that on our website. January, we're just keep going along. We're having our Midwinter Vocal Festival, and we are taking a break in February. We have to breathe a little bit.
Absolutely.
Because there's a couple months where we did two things. One month, we're going to do Man of La Mancha in March, which we are very excited about. We're bringing the director, Hal Ryder, back up. He did Hairspray for us, as well as Mikado. And then we're kind of starting to come back around full circle. We'll have our spring gala in April 2016. We're doing an afternoon of Ave Maria's in May, a whale watching cruise and salmon bake in next June, and then we're going to have a 40th anniversary recap in July 2016. So it is a very busy year for us, but we are really excited, and winning this award just makes it all worth it.
And that is a bewildering array of information. So people may need to go to the Juno Lyric Opera website to follow all the massive amount of things that have happened and that are going to happen this year. But the Mayor's Awards for the Arts are going to be in August. And so maybe you want to share a little bit of information about that if people would like to go and see Juno Lyric Opera receive this richly deserved award.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about it. I know it starts at 5:30, and I believe it's August 21st, if I'm remembering correctly. I don't have it right in front of me. That was the one thing I didn't. So
no, you're correct. It's Friday.
Rolling her eyes at me.
No, it's Friday the 21st of August, and actually, I believe it's going to be held in conjunction with the annual membership meeting of the Juno
yes.
Arts and Humanities Council.
Yes.
So it'll be at the Jack, but then after they get that business meeting done, it will proceed full swing into the Mayor's Awards for the Arts, and there will be other Arts Awards recipients, and I'm sure we're going to have some of them on the show in the coming weeks leading up to those. But it will be Friday the 21st of August, and of course, if people want to go to that, it's a great chance for them to join the Arts and Humanities Council, go to the membership meeting, and still support Juno Lyric Opera.
Yes, and you're right, Ben. That was a lot of information that I spewed out there, and you are welcome to go to our website at www.junoopera.org and find all that information up there.
Excellent. Well, Frances Leach, thank you so very much for taking the time to talk with us this afternoon. Any other words you'd like to share with our listeners?
No, just that we're really excited that we've been around for 40 years, and we thank you for nominating us and giving us this award.
Well, thank you very much for all you do with Juno Lyric Opera, and have a great afternoon, and we look forward to seeing you at the awards ceremony on the 21st of August, if not sooner.
Thank you. You too.
Okay,
we'll talk to you later.
Yep.
Bye.
Support for this station comes from the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool, located at 1619 Glacier Avenue in downtown Juneau. July swim schedules are now available online at juneau.org/parkrec. Augustus Brown Pool is also offering swim lessons on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings during the summer season. More information at 586-5325.
This is Bird Note. So, say you're a biologist and you want to save habitat for birds. How do you do it? You talk to people, says Roz Renfrew of the Vermont Center for Eco Studies, and you listen. Roz meets with landowners in Vermont, New Hampshire, and across New England.
You know, we might not even talk about birds when we have these conversations because that's just not what's going to pique their interest. We might talk about water quality, we might talk about soil quality, but knowing that the conversation is going to help the birds, but keying into what that person's going to be interested in.
The key point being that if you want to get the desired outcome, you have to be pragmatic.
I don't think you can get everybody to appreciate birds, at least not as nearly as much as, you know, someone like me does. I don't think we should expect that because there are real economic constraints, and a landowner has different things they have to consider, even if they do appreciate the birds already. So you have to come to a meeting point where you're appreciating their limitations and their need to actually make an income, you know, and they're appreciating that you're trying to conserve not just the birds, but, you know, the habitat and everything that goes with it.
That's Roz Renfrew of the Vermont Center for Eco Studies, who works with landowners to encourage conservation of habitat. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Juno afternoon, and I am with Brianna and Jack, and we're going to learn about a new film from Teton Gravity Research and also a trail project up at Eagle Crest. So Brianna and Jack, welcome.
Thank you, Ben.
And so who wants to go first? Do you want to hear about the movie first or the trail project first? Let's hear about the movie first.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, so this is a mountain biking film, like you said, from Teton Gravity Research. It's going to be pretty epic, I think. There is biking on glaciers, biking with horses, lots of sweet trail riding, so pretty excited about this movie. We'll be showing it at the Gold Town Theater downtown tomorrow evening. Two showings, one at 7 and one at 9. It's going to be $15 for adults and $12 for kids 12 and under.
And I take it those funds are going to a beneficial purpose?
They are. They're going to go towards the mountain biking trail that Jack will talk about here in a little bit.
Okay, great. So I'm not really too familiar with other Teton Gravity Research films. Have some of those been screened in Juneau recently?
Usually in winter because they're all ski films.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's why I'm not thinking about it from a mountain biking
exactly,
perspective.
Exactly, yeah. I think it's their first one. Yeah, and so I'm pretty excited. They do great ski films, so.
Excellent. Okay, well, they're out. And, of course, this year, maybe this is more appropriate. No, I'm sure we're going to have plenty of snow this coming winter. So
yeah.
Let's talk about the mountain biking trails up at Eagle Crest, Jack, and how this going to see this film could help make them more available and better for folks.
Right, Ben. So this film showing tomorrow night is a fundraiser to build a mountain bike trail at Eagle Crest that we've been working on here for a couple years and are actually hoping to start construction on this week. Up at Eagle Crest. And so the trail will run from the top of the Hooter chairlift down, so not all the way from the top of the mountain, but it should be a really fun trail. It's going to be suited toward a broad range of riders, not total beginners, but kind of intermediates and up. And we're Eagle Crest actually just this past week has finished building a new road to the top of the Hooter chairlift, so people will be able to ride their bikes up there as well. And we're hoping to eventually be able to run the lift, at least for special events and that kind of thing. But we're not counting on it because now we've got the road access as well. So.
And so you mean the lift would actually run during the summer to provide access to the top of the mountain bike trail without people having to ride all the way up?
That's right. And that's still to be determined and worked out with the ski area. But in the meantime, we'll have people will be able to ride up the existing mountain road, and there's a new junction that will take off near the base of the Black Bear Chair and go up to the top of the Hooter Chair. So anyway, this is a fundraiser for that project, and we've got a $50,000 State Parks grant that is providing most of the money, but we're trying to raise at least $10,000 locally, and so all the proceeds from the film tomorrow will go towards that trail. We did a film showing last month, and we were able to raise over $3,000 for the project from that, so we're hoping to have a good turnout tomorrow as well.
Excellent. And what's the timeline for completion on this trail? If work is kind of beginning, well, Eagle Crest built its own standalone road for access, it sounds like.
Yes.
But for the trail, if ground is being broken on that now, when will it be done?
Probably not until next summer. It's a little bit weather dependent because days like today with a torrential downpour, we may have to shut down if we're doing dirt work. But we'll get as much done as we can, weather dependent this season, and finish it up if we need to next summer.
Now, I know that over the years there's been a lot of calls for trying to diversify uses of Eagle Crest during the non-snow months. So this is obviously a pretty prime example of that. Yeah, are there other ski areas outside or in Alaska where there is mountain biking usage of the trails in the off season? There must be.
There are quite a few. I don't know the number, total number off the top of my head, but there's probably at least a couple of dozen ski areas in the U.S. and in Canada that use their chairlifts in the summer to take people to the top of the mountain and ride down on mountain bike trails. So it's kind of a growing sport based at ski areas in the summer.
And this is going to be basically for people who are just riding on their own, not targeted towards visitors, say, like the zip line is. But maybe there's a possibility in the future that people might rent a bike and come up there and do this while they were visiting Juneau?
Yeah, I would say that would be a possibility. We're making this trail for all levels, you know, beginners to advanced, and so that's definitely a possibility for the future. Yeah.
Excellent. I'm just trying to think of great ways to use the mountain,
yeah.
Because, you know, we all want to make sure that valuable community asset gets the right amount of use so that it is always there for us whenever we'd like to have it there,
yeah.
Depending on whatever the season is.
Mm-hmm.
And Eagle Crest has a summer trails plan that includes either new or extended hiking trails as well up at the top of the mountain, and eventually a trail to Cropley Lake, which is a beautiful spot. And now you have to kind of make your way through the muskeg. But so they've got a summer trails plan, and this mountain bike trail is just one piece of that.
And so you worked with the Eagle Crest board to kind of make sure the mountain biking was incorporated into the summer use vision.
That's right. Yeah.
That's great. Well, the film again, Brianna, want to tell us the title and when people can see it? And they can't get tickets in advance because this is the Gold Town, right? They just got to show up?
Correct, yes. It's called Unreal by Teton Gravity Research. And again, we'll be showing it at 7 and 9. You can buy tickets at the door. We're also going to have beer for $5, and there'll be lots of prize giveaways during both showings.
And this is tomorrow night?
This is, yep, Tuesday, tomorrow night, the 28th.
Okay, very good. Well, good. You didn't mention beer the first time, so I'm glad I asked about it, because that probably just got you five more people at each showing. So.
That's what we're hoping.
Excellent.
There will be an underage section as well, so kids are welcome too.
And it's a family-friendly biking film.
It is, correct.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. All right, well then, anything else you'd like to share with our listeners this afternoon?
Just that if people can't make the film showing, we are doing fundraising for the Eagle Crest Mountain Bike Trail through the Juneau Community Foundation. And if they can't make the film, they could go to the Juneau Community Foundation website if they'd like to make a donation to the project. And they're tax deductible.
Excellent. All right. Jack, Brianna, thank you very much for coming in to talk about Unreal and the Teton Gravity Project and the new biking trail that's going to be built any moment now up at Eagle Crest. You guys have a great afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
Born a poor young country boy, Mother Nature's son. All day long I sit and sing my songs for everyone.
This station comes from the Treadwell Ice Arena, located at 105 Savico Road in Douglas. Treadwell Ice Arena is scheduled to reopen on Monday, August 10th, and will be hosting Rocky Mountain Hockey School in August and Kim Yore's Power Skating Hockey Clinic in September. More information at juno.org/parkrec/icerink.
It's about 2 minutes before the hour, and you're listening to a Juno Afternoon, which is just wrapping up. I'm Ben Brown. Thanks so much for listening this Monday, the 27th of July. The weather forecast is pretty much for rain till the end of the week, so I won't parse the details of it too much, but it's only mostly cloudy once we get to Thursday night, Friday, Saturday through Sunday. So look forward to that. And we've been listening to Larry Keel and Natural Bridge, this track, and Country Boy previously. So please stay tuned for All Things Considered on KTOO. And thanks very much for listening. And listen again tomorrow to a Juno Afternoon. Katie Bosner will be your host, and she'll have Joyce Vick talking about Toastmasters, Mac Metcalf talking about Thursday's Alaska National Guard Day reunion, Kelly Barkov and Sharon Lobel here to talk about art at the Rookery, and a 360 North update with Kelly Birkinshaw. Thanks for listening, and have a great Monday afternoon.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
the U.S. and Turkey team up in the fight against ISIS.
They've agreed to a plan to push Islamic State fighters out of a stretch of Syria along the Turkish border.
Today is Monday, July 27th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Melissa Bloch.
And I'm Audie Cornish. Also this hour, President Obama becomes the first sitting U.S. president to visit Ethiopia and talks human rights.
There's still more work to do.
Run detention centers.
Some guys come, you watch them, they sit in the back, and then after a time they start really participating. So it is a transformation.
Also, Republican presidential hopefuls scramble to secure a spot in the first debate.
And the draft Biden brigade.
First, this hour's news.